Do you like exclusive stuff?
Yes, sir.
Do you like having access to your favourite podcast hosts in a way like never before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you wish you had access to our old Survivor Oz episodes that you can't find anywhere else online?
Oh, yeah!
If you answered yes to one, two, or all of those questions, then get excited because the Oz Network is now on Patreon! That's right, your favourite podcast has jumped on the Patreon bandwagon to enable a better listening experience for you, our listener. Wow! For more details, simply head to www.patreon.com/OzNetwork, where you can sign up for as little as $3 a month. It'll be the best decision you make since that last bad one you made. You're listening to the Oz TV podcast, only on the Oz Network.
Welcome to the Oz Network for a new movie review, and we have a great surprise for everybody here today because Ben is not here. So, you're welcome, everybody. And we have another big surprise because somebody is exceeding their contractually obligated episodes for the year and clocking it at the third in, just as many weeks? Maybe even less than that. You've been hearing from too much, so you have nothing left to hear from him. But Noah will be back. So we're going to be talking about Dune Part 2, the sequel to that half movie that came out a couple years ago that nobody realized is a half movie until it finished. And now you get most of the finish of that story because they got to set up for sequels after this. My name is Colin and silence.
That was the one you found.
That was the only one I found.
My name is Noah, and I'm a big worm.
My backup was like, what do I do the sound effect for a worm? What is it? Something like that.
Did they even make a noise?
No, I don't. Well, the sand made a noise. It's coarse and rough and irritating and very noisy.
On the note of the worm, I did laugh at his name. What is it? Muad'Dib. And they're talking about where it comes from. And he's like, it's a combination of mouse and kangaroos. So I was thinking, in the universe of Dune, are there kangaroos? If they know the word kangaroo, then there must be kangaroos hopping around somewhere.
Yeah, we're going to see it in Dune Part 3 or Part 17 eventually when they get
to it.
But
where are the sand kangaroos?
There'll be popcorn buckets of those for the third one.
I'm getting that.
I mean, you actually did do the Dune Oscar review with me a couple years ago.
I don't remember doing
that. That was the only one. I think you said, this is the only one I've seen this year. Or maybe there was a Korean movie, and then you're like, I've also seen Dune. We're like, well, let's do Dune as well. But I think at the time we had done that, you said you'd read the book before. Mm-hmm. I had just started the book. I finished it since then. So I kind of knew it was going to happen in this story. But I've gone into this not knowing anything about your opinion of Dune Part 2. So you can start off. What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, well, I'm surprised you managed to get the book done between then and now. It's a long one.
It took over a year. It was on and off process.
Yeah, well, I have read the book, and I read it not long before the movie came out, and in some ways that really helped because these movies don't really hold your hand a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But in other ways it really hindered it because then it became, where's this? And, they rushed over this. And so in some ways I had the opposite this time because it's been a while since I've read the book now that, in some ways, it didn't help because I'm thinking, who was that again? What is this? But in other ways, I wasn't so caught up in, they missed this bit. They didn't do this bit because I forgot the minor details. But overall, we've not talked about it. This is a very good film. It's very, very, very impressive. I'll say that it won't go through without some criticisms, and I feel a bit bad for it because looking online, it's getting pretty much universally no one's saying anything bad about it, so it feels a bit wrong. I wouldn't say I had no criticisms, but just visually, it's like incredibly impressive. And I don't go to the cinemas often. This is one I knew I had to see. And if I didn't see it in the cinema, I don't know if I would even bother watching it on my crappy laptop. And I don't regret it. You need to see this on a big screen. And I, during it, I was just thinking, like, 100 years ago, this would just, the idea that would, they could achieve this on screen would be mind-blowing to people then. And it kind of makes you think we're at the peak of what you can do with these sort of visual things. But obviously we're not. People are going to keep developing it. But it's that kind of thing where, like, I remember playing Final Fantasy whatever when I was 20 years ago, thinking, oh, it's never going to get better than this graphics wise and visual wise and that. And if you watch that now or play that now, but yeah, it's just it is at the moment, even though it's not my favorite movie, and I'll talk about some of the criticism, it's sort of peak just what you can do with this style of visuals, and like very, very impressive.
Like I really enjoyed the first Dune movie. It was either you or somebody else who told me, don't expect it to have an ending because it's half a movie. Like it's like the opening titles were Dune Part One, and nobody realized that it was only going to be a part one until you walked in. But
how they get you?
What I found was interesting is, like, and I've seen Dune multiple times since then, and as much as I love that, I always sort of feel like this is an incomplete story. Like, you need a part two to enjoy Dune 1 fully. But yet I feel like Dune Part 2, in a weird way, stands better as its own movie. And I'm kind of like you. There are some criticisms I have for the movie, but at the same time, like, this is like top movies I've seen the last couple of years where I'm like this blew my mind. Like, the only thing I could really compare it to was, it's kind of like seeing the Lord of the Rings for the first time. Like, you know, I read the book and then I'm like, wow, like, how do they actually adapt this book and do it this well? And Jamie, who hasn't read any of the books, like, she absolutely loved it. What you're saying about seeing on a big screen, we actually saw it in something called ScreenX, which I don't know if you have that there, but that's where
maybe.
There's like certain sequences that are filmed with like IMAX with expanded screen, but what it is projected on the side walls. So basically you have like all your peripheral vision, you're seeing the full landscape and everything. And then you'll have characters who are moving up the side of your face here, and then they move in the front of the screen, which
away, Zendaya. What are you doing next to me?
It kind of helps to put you like, oh, you're literally in the middle of the world, but because it's just a lot of like sand landscapes, that didn't add as much. So now I asked Jamie, like, do you want to do anything this Friday? She said, well, we could see Dune Part 2 again. It's literally been a week since you've seen it, and she wants to see it again. So, I mean, I absolutely love this movie. And as far as, like, adapting from the book, I mean, they get it pretty close. There's a few things, particularly near the end, that they change. But I feel like the changes they make from the book to this movie make sense for a movie. And they specifically make sense because, you know, there's a Dune Part 3 coming, which I haven't read the next book, which I started looking to see. Like, the first one is like 500-600 pages. The second one's like 180 pages or something. Like, why is the second book so short? You know, if you're going to split
the first one, he's like, nah,
yeah, like
too much.
You could have split that with maybe they are planning to split the next couple books. But like, it was just crazy that they were able to put that much into this movie, and the changes they made really only are there for, we're leaving certain things out because we're going to, I'm guessing, expand that in the next one.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the Lord of the Rings, and I think there are a lot of parallels, and I did think about that a lot when I was watching it. But you're right, Anna, and we've never covered the Lord of the Rings. I don't think, well, no one has the time to cover the Lord of the Rings.
Ben
won't do it, and even if he did do it, I probably wouldn't want him on there because I'm too protective of it. But that's always grinds my gears about that, the sort of diehard, oh, I'm Tolkien fan. I am a Tolkien fan. I've read them all multiple times. But the idea, if you're adapting a story, not everything, you can't just lift up words from a page.
Yeah.
And put it onto a screen. They're different mediums, and it sort of does annoy me when people say, oh, they changed this or they didn't do this. So some changes are definitely necessary. But I also agree with you This film just made me hate Quantum of Solace more because people always go, well, oh, it's a great film if you tack it on the end of Casino Royale. And my argument is always, well, The Two Towers is a great film regardless. And I agree with you. This stands better as a film. Like going into it, I didn't rewatch the first, but I did sort of do some YouTube videos. I was thinking, well, they're really not holding our hands. Like we just jump straight back in, basically. There's no like previously on June, like
got Jeff Probst in there. Previously on June.
Previously on June. But I agree with you. Like this is better than the first one. I think because it was so jarring the way that first one ended that I feel like even though I do have criticism that we'll get to, this just as a film, even though it's part two, stands on its own the same way that Two Towers Empire Strikes Back does, which is definitely one of its greatest strengths that the first didn't have.
Yeah. The majority of complaints I'm seeing from people are like specifically with the ending of this movie, and the ending is very much like the book, but the difference being the book makes a time jump of like 2 or 3 years. And then there's certain characters that exist after that time jump that aren't in the movie. But when you're making a movie, if you stop a movie to say 2 years later, you lose so much momentum because people are watching this in one shot. You do 2 years later in a book, a person's putting that book down and picking it up over the course of several days, if not weeks, or in the case of Dune, a couple of years. And it's completely different. So like, that's one of those things where I'm like, I understand why you didn't, you know, include certain things. I already know what one of your criticisms are going to be because I know your feelings on a certain actor in this movie. So do you just want to start with Timothy Chalamet?
Yeah, I mean there are other criticisms, but let's just get that out of the way. I don't get him as an actor. And look, I'll try and be somewhat nice. Like when you do read the book, I sort of think, well, who else could they really get for this role? So like, I don't know if he was necessarily miscast unless they got some sort of unknown. So in that way, I kind of get it. Like I'll try and be somewhat in the like nice, but he's the most overrated actor of our time because like he's in everything and yet he doesn't really give anything. And like there were a few times when he dropped his sort of monotone to do a few yells and it was laughable. I wasn't buying at all. I think at one point I literally laughed. To me, he doesn't carry this film. And to me, there were times when I found that when him and another actress were together, it was just sort of cringy. I didn't buy him as a sort of king or a leader. I didn't buy him as this warrior. He just sort of gives us like an emo teenager role, which partly the character is, but there's a lot more to the character. And I just don't think we got it. But I'm seeing a lot of what I read this morning before we got on, a lot of praise for him. So I don't know what you thought. And then we'll get to his co-lead star.
I actually don't mind him as much as you do. I will say the chemistry with another actor in this movie, I don't think is as good as some people are making it out to be. I agree with that. I don't buy him in the action scenes. But at the same time, like you said, who else are they going to cast? Like, have you ever seen the other versions of this, like the 1984 David Lynch one or the miniseries?
No, I want to see it, but I've been saving it.
Like same problem with both of those. Like they cast an actor where it's like, well, I don't really buy this. I mean, that's sort of the problem. It's like when your character's supposed to be what, like 15, 16 years old. I mean, maybe a little bit older by the end of the story. It's very hard to find somebody who's going to pass for that age, but is also going to be believable in the action scenes. But the one scene when he suddenly went to, like, as you said, the angry, that was actually the part where I really liked him. It was in those quieter scenes that you're talking about where I'm like, I'm not 100% buying it. But again, for argument's sake, who else are you going to cast? Zendaya, I'll also say it's the best I've seen her in anything, but I'm going to put a lot of the fault on this for overwriting her character. They do change certain things with her character, partly to be a little bit more with the times and partly because you are condensing the story. I don't think they do her any favors because I think they wrote a character that is so big and so out there. And at times I feel almost obnoxious where it's like, I can't really get behind her, but yet the whole movie seems designed for you to get behind her.
Yeah. Did they not just sort of turn her into a moody American teenage? Like,
yeah.
this like sort of desert warrior sort of from a sand planet. And yeah, I nothing Zendaya before this. I don't know if I've really seen her in much. I know Ben doesn't like her. The only thing I think I saw her is 5 minutes of Jude Part One.
All the shots that were in the trailer that amounted to her screen time.
But she did not impress me at all. And it's a fair criticism to say it's partly the character. But I also watching this, like, you couldn't get anyone else. Like, really? This is... And like these two have zero chemistry. They share the most awkward kiss of all time in cinema, I think. And so awkward that they cut away from actually showing any close-ups from it and just show you the back of the character's heads because it was so uncomfortable.
It was weird.
And like this weird, like, oh no, it was just awkward. She did not impress me at all, along with Timothy, and the chemistry was not there. And at the end, this is not really a spoiler, but at the end when he's saying, and I love her, like, in fairness, like, if you read the book, I don't know if there's necessarily tons of, like, chemistry between the characters. Mm-hmm. So when he says, oh, I love you, I don't know if it's necessarily much more or less than the book. And maybe we'll get into some of the others. I don't know if characters or dialogue is it's definitely not the strength of these movies, but I also don't know if that's really what they're trying to achieve. I think the characters are almost sort of secondary, but...
Unless you're Javier Bardem, because he can make anything work.
Yes, Javier Bardem was great. Although I did laugh, like, why does Zendaya sound like a moody teenager, and why does Javier Bardem have, like, a Spanish accent? Like,
yeah.
Aren't they supposed to be from the same tribe?
Don't they even... I think there's even a part in the movie where they ask that. It's like, how come he doesn't sound like you? Is that just a way to cover up? You don't want to change it? Yeah. But Javier Bardem was Jamie's favorite in this movie. Like, there were multiple times throughout the movie where she's like, this guy is so good in this movie. And I'm like, you know, that's the guy from, like, the greatest, you know, Bond villain of all time, or at least I picked him as the greatest Bond villain of all time. I don't know where you ranked him, but so many actors. It was between him and Max Zorin, because Christopher Walken is sort of in this movie.
Did Christopher Walken know where he was?
I don't think he was supposed to. This is like, did you ever see the movie Bowfinger with Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy?
No.
My favorite line in that movie, they're basically making a movie filming somebody without their permission, like following a movie star around and filming without the permission to film a fictional movie. And Steve Martin tries to defend his actions by saying, did you know that Tom Cruise didn't even know he was in that vampire movie till 2 years later? And that's kind of the way Christopher Walken is in this movie. It's like they drugged him or something. They threw him on the set with the costumes, and he's like, I don't know why I am here, but I will act regardless.
Yeah, he's not going to get up on stage at the Oscars when they call it out.
It is kind of the weirdest casting in the movie. Like, I don't know if I love Christopher Walken as the emperor of the universe, you know? But we got him. We got Lea Seydoux, who's also in this movie, like, way less than... I'm hoping she's in more of the sequel, because this is a character that I had to look up, because I'm like, did they create this character for the movie? Because I had just read the book, and I'm like, oh, apparently she was in the book, but she makes no presence in the book. She makes almost no presence in this movie. I mean, you get somebody that's... I understand it's mostly Bond fans who are going to be like, hey, it's Lea Seydoux, or fans of Blue is the Warmest Room or whatever. But like, she's barely in the movie. But yet, at the same time, you get... who's the fourth one? There was a fourth Bond actor.
Walken, Javier Bardem, Lea Seydoux, and
Dave Bautista. Yeah, who
he was
in the first movie, I was sort of questioning, like, this is like, it's like Mr. Hinks all over again. Like, you cast a big star in this movie and barely give him anything to do, but he has so much more to do in this movie, even though his character kind of gets pushed aside as, like, default villain. I actually really liked him in this movie. Like, he was like an angry middle-aged man teenager, you know? Like, this is definitely a lot more development on the villain side in this movie. It's not really one of the Bond actors, but did you ever see Elvis with Austin Butler?
No, I don't think I've seen anything with Austin Butler. But
this is, I think, the first thing he signed on to after Elvis and his Oscar nomination. And the sequence where it's like a fight scene on the Harkonnen planet, that was like one scene where I'm like, this is running way too long, right? I'm like, I could have done without 15 minutes less of this, which is also kind of the Les Seydoux sequence, which is unfortunate. But having said that, when you get to the end of the movie, that's where I'm like, well, you needed that, because otherwise you are dropping the main antagonist in this movie in at the last minute and hoping the audience is going to care. So even though that sequence ran a little bit long when it was sort of at the midway point in the movie for me, when I got to the end movie, I appreciate that because he really makes an impact as the villain, at least what I thought.
Well, I was laughing watching his character because I'm thinking, why couldn't they just got Rick Yoon to do this? Why Rick Yoon?
He's already done
good
it.
Yeah, exactly. He's got the experience.
Had your Bond actors out more.
Yeah, I'm just looking, and I've seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I don't remember his character in that, but
I don't know that.
But I've not seen anything else with him. But he did a really good job. But you sort of touched on partly one of my major issues with this film. And I don't think it's necessarily a criticism as so much as it's not the style that I kind of like, although maybe it is a criticism, is that in one thing I will say, I always harp on, I don't like long movies, whatever. This is similar to No Time to Die. This goes by quickly. The pacing is very well done.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I have the same issue with the first Dune that no one has seemed to talk about. That to me, both these films, while visually impressive, great experiences, they feel like clip shows to me. I feel like I am watching a previously on, because it goes from, we're at this scene and okay, now we're here and we're at this scene and we're together on the thing and okay, we're on the next and now going to the desert and now we're here and now we're here, 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 here. And I guess it's mostly by design and mostly to try and fit all of that damn book in. But both of them feel like you're watching a previously on Dune flashback sequence. It never really feels like you're watching a movie. And in some way that makes the length go by quickly. But then like you're talking about the scene with Rick Yoon in it. I'm just going to call him Rick Yoon. That's all I could think about. Like, Zhao's in this movie. It looked great. I did love that sequence, but I'm wondering, why couldn't they sort of cut this in earlier alongside what's going on in the desert? That I was sort of with you. I'm like, well, we're halfway through and now we're just spending like 30 minutes with these guys and we're not seeing the other guys. It was a bit jarring. And that's another thing that, like, if you've read the book, The Two Towers, the way that's written is very different to the movie. And then they masterfully put three diverging storylines into one film is done so well, underrated, I think. So I guess to me, pacing and sort of jarring sequencing was my major issue with the film.
You actually completely pinpointed what my main problem was with cutting to that whole Harkonnen arena battle sequence. Well, basically everything on their planet. And that was that it sort of came out of nowhere. Like it, and I was thinking the exact same thing. You had all of Paul's story for like an hour and a half. And then you cut to like a bunch of characters you really hadn't seen before weren't even in the first movie. And now you're following them for an extended period of time. And then you go back to Paul's story. It's like, there's no reason why you couldn't have done like a Two Towers where you have Frodo and Sam, and then you cut to Aragorn and everybody else, and then you cut back to Frodo and Sam. Like, it was just, let's dedicate this chunk in the middle of the movie to characters that you haven't seen before and you're not going to see again till the end of the movie. But if you space it out a little bit more, you give it a chance to breathe, then it doesn't feel quite as jarring.
Yeah, to me, that was the major sort of... Because then we got there and I did love the sequences, but I'm like, well, we haven't seen the heroes in a long time now.
Did Dune Part 2 end? Are we on to Part 3?
And then, like, I guess it's just how sort of quick everything moves, which again I do think is partly by design, but we sort of get to the battle and towards the end, and it's sort of like, because I was getting a lift at the end of this movie, so I actually was being a bit cheeky. I hate it when people do that. I was checking my phone because I'm like, oh, what's the time, because I need to meet at this time, and then I check the time, I'm like, oh, I think it's due to end in a minute, but we're just getting into the big battle. And we've spent all this time, which was not wasted time, but we spent all this setup. And now I thought there was going to be, like, Dune 1 was the half movie. I thought this was going to end with, again, I'm sorry for bringing up the Lord of the Rings so much, but, like, in that book, you read that book, the Battle of Helm's Deep is, really, it's probably only about 12 pages, but on the movie, this is where, like, they're different mediums. That takes up maybe an hour.
Yeah.
And, like, they really take this, like, 13 pages or two chapters or whatever, and, like, well, we're a movie. Let's utilize us being a movie. But it got to this end, and I'm like, oh, crap, it's got, like, 5 minutes left. I am going to make my lift home. And they rushed the battle, and then they rushed a few, but not to spoil it, character deaths, and then they have the ending, which was pretty close to what the book was, and then it was, as I guess, setting up the next one, but it also felt like very more conclusive than the first one, but a lot more rushed, and like I was disappointed by not just this movie, but I feel like in general movie battles did peak at the Battle of Helm's Deep. Ever since then, I think, I'm pretty sure the Avengers and the Hobbit, did they come out in the same year?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they did. 2012.
I remember being very disappointed with both of them, that just feeling like cinematic battles, just, I don't know if they'll ever be the same. That's one of the things that CG has sort of, I think, killed. Because you have something that's so impressive with Helm's Deep that now all those Marvel movies, Star Wars, Dune, it just all sort of, you can't even see anything that's going on, and it's all just sort of blurs. And it's not just Dune, it was The Hobbit too. Like, that was, had the same thing. So, yeah, I don't know if you found, like, the pacing to be off or anything, but it was a bit jarring at times for me.
I actually was more so happy that the final battle wasn't too big. Because if you take, like, the third Hobbit movie, The Battle of Five Armies, let's take one battle and stretch it out for 2.5 hours. I'm like, I don't want that, you know?
Somewhere in between.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the fact that this does get a bit rushed at the end is more because I was expecting that it would have more of a complete ending. And even though it isn't different, you could tell we're leaving certain things open for a third movie, or we're trying to, it was kind of like The Dark Knight. The ending of this was very much like The Dark Knight. You know, we've got an ending. It's not necessarily the ending you expect, but this will kind of tease where we're going with the next one. And I'm sure we're going to get, you know, the 150 pages of that stretched into Dune Part 3 and 4 when that eventually comes out.
Have they announced it? Surely it's coming.
Well, Denis Villeneuve has said that he's literally in the middle of writing Part 3 as we speak. So he's not talking about it, but he's saying, I'm not talking about it until I complete the script. But he's at least writing the script right now, so it will be coming. But even with Dune Part 1, like, they didn't announce there was a Part 2 until a couple of months after it had come out. And really, it was only, what, 2000 and was it 2020 or 2021? I can't remember. It's only 21. Been a couple. Yeah, so it's been barely over 2 years, and they were able to get this movie out, which that alone is incredible that a movie this size can get out that quickly. So I'll be going to see this again. There's certain things that, like, I have issues with, which I know on a second viewing, especially the pacing things, I feel like will go a lot better. But this is kind of one of those rare movies where it's like, I probably had more individual issues with this than I do with other movies that I like more. But at the same time, like, man, I can't wait to see this movie again. Like, I loved it. I'm 100% going to buy this one. You thought about what you're going to do?
Yeah, that's the thing. I definitely have criticisms, and I guess that this is the medium to talk about it, but it doesn't say that I thought the film was bad. Like, it was just very impressive to watch on a big screen. So I will buy it definitely. Like, there's no question about that. And I thought it was way better than the first one. It's just something about this franchise that, because everyone's going gaga over it, and rightfully so, but there's something that just, and I loved the book too, but there's something that just doesn't connect with me where I, in 20 years' time, this is not my Lord of the Rings, this is not my Star Wars. I don't have a personal, it doesn't make me want to watch it again necessarily, like when the first one finished. Two weeks later, 3 weeks later, I never thought about this film until the second one came up. And I feel like in 2 or 3 weeks' time, I probably won't be thinking about this one. So I would buy both of them, and I will definitely be in line for the third one. But there is something about this franchise that doesn't hook me the way it hooks other people. I don't have that. I don't think I'm going to have that nostalgia for the Dune movies, but I'm going to be there to watch them all, though. And that's someone who doesn't go to the cinema often, because the cinema triggers me these days. And yes, there were lots of people talking during this film too, but definite buy. And rankings, Dune 2, Dune 1.
Oh yeah, completely agree. I am kind of one of these people who's like really grabbed by this, and I want to read more of the books. I'm waiting on the from the library the second book to come. I don't know whether there's like, because I know there's like, dozens of books now or something like that. I'm like, can I read some of those other ones without reading the second? Does it have to be in order? I'll have to kind of look that up. Did you get the popcorn bucket, this famous sandworm popcorn bucket?
No, I didn't see that.
Oh.
But this, we're talking about Hobart here.
Well, we had we went to the evening showing on the Friday, and the first thing Jamie asked is, "Do you have the sandworm popcorn buckets?" They're like, no, we don't have any of them. We sold out of them. And Jamie asked, "Okay, would you know you're gonna be getting more of them?" He says, "Honestly, they issued them to us, and they've told us we're probably not getting more of these." In the morning, it sold out. So basically, the very first showing of the day, they said there were people who came to the theater just to buy the bucket, who didn't even see the movie. This has become like the new hottest item. This really, really grotesque, let me eat popcorn out of a sandworm's mouth. I want to
That
find one of these
should
on
be a
Google.
rule. I've never thought about that, but that should be a rule. You're not allowed to buy popcorn and go to a movie. That's perverse.
Oh, we have like skip the, it's called Skip the Dishes here, but I think there's like Uber Eats and other places. I could order a bucket of popcorn from the movie theater and have them deliver it to my house. I don't even have to go there. Which I'm like, now I'm wishing I didn't do that, because this thing's probably gonna be selling for hundreds of dollars in a couple of weeks.
Well, that's why I didn't get them. They all went to Winnipeg.
You know what they need to do? They need to have popcorn buckets where you're eating out of Timothy Chalamet's mouth. And maybe have them stick around for a little bit longer. That'll be the next big grotesque popcorn bucket.
I want to eat out of Javier
Oh yes. Or Rebecca Ferguson, who plays the mom,
Bardem.
who's also in the Mission Impossible movies, which I love. Jamie was just watching, have you ever seen Doctor Sleep? Sleep in the
No,
Shining?
that's people, isn't
Yeah, the sequel to Shining. She was watching that yesterday, and like Rebecca Ferguson is so good in that movie. Like, I was kind of disappointed that her role was smaller in this one, but along with like things you couldn't adapt for a movie, when I'm looking back on what her role was in the book, I'm like, that's very hard to explain, even in a book, let alone on screen. I'm like, that probably needs its own movie. All right, so what else do we have coming up? We got Ghostbusters movies. I think you just heard Ghostbusters 1. We're gonna have Ghostbusters 2, which Noah is kind of on the page of Ben. He says, I like them, but I'm not crazy about them. So thank you for backing up Ben.
No.
Now you're offended. You want to talk about triggering? I said, you thank you. You're like Ben, and you're like, no. Where's the soundboard?
The first one is great. I've only ever seen the second one on TV like 20 years ago. I've never seen the ladies do the Ghostbusters or whatever it is. And I've not seen the new ones, although Carrie Coon is one of my favorite
Oh,
actresses.
yeah.
So I love her. So what I'm basically saying is I've only really seen the first one.
But you like the first one better than the second, right?
Yes, but keeping in mind I've not seen the second one for about 20 years. But the
Okay.
first one is a great solid movie. I don't have that. James Bond, Star Wars, sort of Lord of the Rings thing with it. But it's good.
I'm going to make a correction when we get to the next Ghostbusters recap, because Ben was basically saying, Noah agrees with me. He doesn't love Ghostbusters. So I won't let you be thrown under the bus and be grouped in with Ben Waterworth.
What was Ben's favorite? The ladies do Ghostbusters?
We haven't done it yet, but we're kind of anticipating that he's going to end up liking the last two Ghostbusters movies after saying, oh, I don't really get the big deal about the first one. He did like the second one better than the first, which I don't agree with. But
I think great film, great film. I just don't have a childhood attachment.
No nostalgia.
To it,
but there's not
no, no nostalgia the way that I do with other franchises, but great film.
So we've also got our 24 episodes, and Oscar month is wrapping up. You're probably going to be hearing the last ones of it in the next couple days. No more with Noah, though, so this is all you're going to get out of him until 2025. We'll make sure we put a best of clip in there or something like that for you.
June 3. Yeah, you can put my opening line to this film.
Oh, it'll have to be your closing line because you haven't looked up anything else. So let me throw you under the bus now. My name is Colin, and... I don't agree with Ben either.
My name is Noah, and
look at my moment.
Look at my sand. Oh, I blew it.
Thanks for downloading this episode of the Oz Network. Make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to the podcast via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or by copying our RSS feed into your preferred podcast provider. And while you're there, please drop us a rating and leave us some feedback. You can also be sure to stay up to date with all the latest episodes and happenings from the show, as well as finding out how you can get involved in upcoming episodes by following our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as getting everything you need under one roof at theoznetwork.net. Thanks again for listening, and we'll speak to you next time.